What's the name of the podcast again?
Everyone Lies at Stand Up.
I know getting your very first software development job can really be overwhelming. So
I'm a human being first.
Exactly. Potential is this is a gamble.
They assume because it has worked at Silicon Valley, it's going to work at Kaswa.
Most people need to know when to make a phone call and when to send a text message.
What I fear the most in my career is for me to be not worth my years of experience.
Yeah, but I found the job before I left. So don't let Sapa do it.
Find the point I'm trying to make is that if it's a very first job, money shouldn't be the primary focus because you most likely won't be earning a lot.
Hi everyone, welcome to the fifth episode of the Late for Stand Up podcast. This episode is going to be focused on product design. Currently, it seems to be one of the hottest things in tech, the hottest fields, and we have a lot of people jumping into it, but I feel like not a lot of people actually understand what's going on. So it would be nice to learn a lot of things from this episode. We have here UX Derek and Benny Makachi. Unfortunately, my co-host couldn't make it due to personal reasons, but the show still must go. We can begin with a little introduction. Who would go first? I think Benny.
Yeah.
Wait, this is a ladies first thing.
Yeah, ladies first.
Okay, hi, my name is Benny Makachi. I'm a human being first. I'm a product designer, Nigerian, and I'm also a podcast host. It's so good to be on the other side of your podcast, not having to worry about guests and all of that. So, Salam, I'm happy that you're taking that over. And I'm so excited for this episode, especially, talking to guys within the field and representing for the ladies. I really look forward to how this turns out.
Wow.
Thank you for having me.
Wow. Wow, it's nice having you too. You're a human being. Wow. That's probably like the ultimate user experience
ish.
Yeah, being a human being is like the ultimate the ultimate user experience. UX Derek.
Yeah, my name is Derek. I'm also a human being. So I lead the Figma community in Accra, and then I do product design stuff with Yellow Card.
That's nice.
I don't host podcasts. It's just a couple of Twitter spaces.
Oh, that's cool. But I think that's still something cool because they're kind of related, and that might even be more difficult because you get to do it live and you don't really have the advantages you do when you're recording a podcast.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, it's really nice having both of you on board, and it would be nice for the audience to kind of get to know the kind of work you do and understand it better. Therefore, I have a few questions for the both of you. So let's begin. So who would this first question go to? I think I could take both of your ideas. This time, Derek first. Yeah, so how did you get into product design?
Product design. So I didn't do anything related to IT or design or anything in university. Mm-hmm. I was actually a mathematics and statistics student. So after my first degree, I went into my public health. And then from there, I kept doing my design stuff. So like normal graphic design, doing posters, banners, illustrations and stuff. Then we're waiting for the government to post us because we had done the public health and now waiting and all for Allied Health Council. And I decided to teach. So I taught digital media at DIV. So I taught there after a while. One of my students came with a question about Figma. I didn't know what Figma was. So I went to search, just to get answers for the student. I was digging. The next time I came to class and I was like, yeah, this is how you do this. After that, I kept on reading about Figma. And then I found myself here. I think I led myself down a rabbit hole in Figma, then started learning about user research because I had a maths background. So the research part was, it interested me a lot. And then later I realized, oh, there's something called UX design. You could just do the research, use your inferences to come up with design decisions. And yeah, it has been fun ever since. So I don't have a captivating story. It's just, wow, I decided to do homework for somebody.
Yeah, but this is actually quite captivating. Like getting in from your mind background. Yeah, Ben, you're saying something.
Yeah, I think you have a captivating story, because that's like sharing that makes me realize that sometimes designers have something in common, curiosity, right? I mean, you could have waved off what the student said, but it got you curious enough to go and, you know, look at what is this thing about, and then follow that curiosity until it led you to, you know, finally product design. So that's a really interesting story.
That makes sense.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, Benny, what about you? How did you get into product design?
So my product design story journey is not a linear one, because before product design, I worked in PR, I worked in sales. And so at some point I knew that I wanted to venture into tech. But I just wasn't sure what exactly within the tech industry I wanted to do, because I'm not a... He studied statistics. On the other hand, I studied history and international studies. So I don't like anything that has to do with math and calculation. And my first question was, if I'm getting into tech, how do I use... While I don't like math, I'm very good at problem solving. So like, how do I put my creative skill and my problem solving skill, you know, within the tech industry? And I started to look. So what I did was quit my job and look for a job within the tech industry.
Wow.
So I worked with an edtech company just to get like an insight, like an everyday closer look at, you know, what goes on, how decisions are made, so that I can know, is it product design I'm going for, product management, or whatever it was. So that was a really insightful step that I took, because it was during my time at the company that I realized that every single time or everywhere that I've worked or things that I've been interested in, people, problem solving and creativity was a thing for me, you know. But with sales and PR, I will handle the after of the products. Like, people have already done the thinking, done the decision making, created the product, and then I will have to like sell it or interact with people. But I wanted to be a part of creating the product. So that was how I came about product design, and took a boot camp, started looking, got an internship, you know, try to join the UX community, and they're really very accommodating. And the next they say, use the screen.
Accommodating with a sprinkle of dragon on Twitter.
Oh my goodness, I know. But you have to pick and choose, though. You could go with the controversial ones or go to... I find that the ones who really know their stuff aren't the most controversial people. They are the ones who have like lesser numbers of followers and stuff.
Yeah.
You have to pick and choose.
Yeah, but this is quite an intriguing story. Like, you need to be so curious for you to have to quit your job, not knowing what you're jumping into. Like, that was a really bold step.
Yeah, but I found the job before I left, though. Don't let that happen.
Yeah.
I advise you actually find the like job that. Before you quit one or at least
half. Yeah, actually like yeah. that. Like, this sounds much more practical. Like, not the kind of advice where you give to people on the regular that just quit your job. Like, how are they going to get
with no back end?
No. Yeah. Okay, so my next question, which probably should have been my first, is what is product design? Because there are a lot of confusion about what it actually is. Is it just UI? Is it just UX? People don't really seem to understand. Who would like to take that question?
I think Benita would like to start.
Oh no, you go first.
All right. So I think these roles depend largely on the company, right? So somebody, or we have two people who might be UX designers in two different companies, but then their roles might be slightly different. We have people who are UX designers, but then you go into the company and they only do UI. They like stakeholders do everything, and then they just come and say, okay, give me a screen, right? So first off, it depends largely on the company or on the team that you're on. But then the widely accepted understanding is that normally the UI designers handle everything visual. So more of how something feels, how it looks, the design direction that a product is going to take. While sometimes the UX designers deal with how the users move from point A to point B in a product, right? And then so you can stretch it and say product designers sometimes handle the fitting of the product in business goals and how it, sometimes they look at data, how the product is being used by people, and then they redo some designs and all that. So these are some of the accepted understandings, but then I still maintain like it largely depends on the kind of company that you are working with and how they understand these roles.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree about how these things vary from, you know, one organization to another. And the thing you talked about, you know, working within an organization and sometimes you just happen to handle mostly UI, it's a fight that we find ourselves, you know, constantly fighting, like having to advocate for the importance of UX. You know, because most times people who are not into design just see the product, the interface. They don't see all the technicalities and, you know, the strategy involved, the process involved that needs to really capture the user goal and the business goal. So, yes, it does differ from company to company. I will say that products sometimes... You can even, you know, further categorize the things or sectionalize them in the sense that you have digital product design, which is what people refer to when they're talking about UI, UX. And then remember, you still have product design that goes beyond the digital part of design. So like the microphone that we're using now, someone designed it, someone came up with all of that. So, you know, I would say that product design is all encompassing. It's more grand in the sense that... it's not just you designing an app. It's not you just designing a website. It's an entire product which can stretch beyond website apps. You can go to like actual newsletters, you know, as you scale as well, design systems and all of that. So it's more encompassing. But at the end of the day, that's something that a UX and a UI designer can do. I just think that some people like to go back and forth and gatekeep about, you know, you're a UX designer, you're not a product designer. Just let people do that. So long as it works for the company, so long as at the end of the day you have, you know, a reasonable product that is functional and usable, I don't care about titles.
I think sometimes it doesn't matter. The title doesn't really matter. I think as humans, people want to this, they want to categorize themselves, but the users don't care.
Yeah, just give me the product.
I think that's actually like a general problem in the tech ecosystem. People want to call themselves developers, engineers, senior architects, seniors, juniors. But at the end of the day, the end user doesn't really care. They just want their product in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
But then this makes me curious about something, right? How can you design a product without actually going through the UX stage, right? Like just jumping straight to UI. Does that mean that most of the time stakeholders just assume that they know what the users want?
Yes.
In most cases, again, you find yourself, especially in this part, you find yourself having to constantly advocate for the importance of UX. You know, and they're like, just build the screen. I know that there are products that have kicked off and scaled at an incredible level without having to, you know, focus too much on UX. But that's not to say that, you know, it's not important. And yes, there are certain things that you can do within design that don't necessarily require you to do the UX, but you have some data supporting that. So that's where like analytics comes into, you know, the picture. That's when like A/B testing comes into the picture. So you're not going in depth with your UX processes, but you know, there's still some amount of data that backs up the decision, the design decision that you're making while designing the interface. So yes.
Yeah. A lot of I think African CEOs or stakeholders are culprits of this. Like they assume because it has worked at Silicon Valley, it's going to work at Kaswa. the fact that the product has worked in another country using this method doesn't mean it's going to work here. If you look at the Uber app in Ghana and compare it to the Uber app in San Francisco, it has differences.
Speaking of the Uber app, would you pay to get a walkie buddy? Like, I don't.
Yeah, I actually saw that.
I did.
All right,
would you pay? Yeah. We'll have scale here, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah, so you need to understand how your products would have, or the differences your products have in the context. So the UX part is very important. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, my next question is, what's the relation with product design and front-end software development? Do you need to be a front-end software developer or do you need to know how to code? Because I think most people sometimes just assume that if you're good in UI, UX or designing, you should just start doing front-end or coding. What are your thoughts on that? I think Derek, you should take this first.
I was about to pass it. Okay, so this is my opinion. I think every designer should at least try and read how code works. Not have in-depth knowledge, but just maybe watch a YouTube video, intro to HTML or something. Or if you're working in a team, my team uses Flutter, so I've decided to pick up Flutter, right? So just so you understand what is possible and maybe have an idea of how much time it should take to build something. So right now, how the design tools are being built, like Figma is being built as close to coding as possible. So we have things like space between. You are familiar with space between?
Not really.
So I think HTML has the space between it. So if you understand that, okay, space between here is the same as space between that we have in CSS, it won't be difficult to explain it to a developer if you want him to or her to do something. So yes, you need to have slight idea, but it won't cost you if you don't know anything about programming. That's what I feel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Benny? Yeah. Yes. It's funny because I recently took a course in no code, workflow to be specific. Within the tech industry, you just find yourself evolving, there are lots of things coming up. When you think you have handle of this, something else comes up, right? So you just have to be able to see, how am I going to make sure that I'm not obsolete or my skills are not obsolete? So I agree with what Derek has said. It gives, there's something called handoff in the design process. So after you've done your UX, you've designed, for the developers to be able to implement, you have to successfully communicate your designs to them, right? If there's a miscommunication or there's a communication gap, that will show in your product, in their implementation. So what I found is, after learning more about, after learning workflow, you know, it's just so, the relationship between design and front end is a very sweet and symbiotic one, you know. So as he said, when you, if you use auto layout in Figma, then the Flexbox workflow feature would be very, something you can relate to. The way that we use frames to sectionalize our designs are the same ways that you use div blocks to do that in workflow. So it's good to have, you know, like a basic understanding of CSS, HTML, if possible. It doesn't mean that you're going to go in depth into coding, because as I said, I'm not a mathematics person. Don't give me numbers, you know. But I'm still good at problem solving. So that's it. It's something I advise, if you can pick, if you don't want to go into coding, pick up no code. And I mean the future to no code to a really good extent. So
this sound interesting. What about back-end software development? Because as a back-end developer, I've had instances where we're designing some features, and I think usually it starts from the product design stage. So after they design the wireframes and all of that, they give it to the back-end guys for us to look. So then So then we have a look and we're like, no, this thing you're asking for,
it's not possible.
It's not possible. Like, you want to have like 5 API calls just to deliver this data, and you want your app to be fast. Like, that doesn't seem fair to us. So then, so how does like product design also translate into back end?
So to take that, I will say that that is where collaboration comes in. So it's important that as a product designer within your team, let's say your team encompasses of your product manager, product owner, developers, front end, back end, the UX researcher, and you, the UI UX person. It's very important that at every stage they're carried along. While you're not, your creativity is not being micromanaged, you want to be able to carry them along. This is what I'm trying to do. How possible is it to achieve this within the time frame or the timeline that we have, right? If we cannot achieve it to this extent, to what extent can we achieve it without losing the essence of the future, right? So it's very important to collaborate and carry your team along as you go through your design process. So again, communication is something that you cannot avoid. Collaboration, teamwork is something you should not avoid, you know, when you work within the design industry. So that I think is how I can address that. But yeah,
I think when I was working on a developer's portal a couple of months ago, and I had to like understand some things, that so the APIs, so I went to Isaac to teach me APIs, what is an API, what does API do, and all that. So since then, I've had an understanding that, okay, if, like you said, we are making a lot of requests on a screen, it's going to like slow down the app. So that has helped me in my process to end. Yeah, I agree with whatever Benita mentioned. So like, you don't wait till the last minute before you show your backend engineers what you are working on. So sometimes in the middle of my design, I do a Loom video and I send it to the engineers. I'm like, yeah, this is what I'm thinking. What do you think? Is it going to work? So we do not sit or do not hide somewhere and then do your design and then later go and stress the back-end engineers. That's it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense because once you take them through, their input will also kind of influence the design choices that you make.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So for my next question, what's a typical work day like for both of you?
I like to hear Derek.
Yeah, so my work day. Okay, so I work within the payments pod. And within the payments pod, we have 3 supports. So I do stand ups almost every day.
Late for stand up.
So the normal work day, you go for stand up, give an update, or you listen to what the engineers have built so far. And I have like amazing developers, so I don't really stress.
Nice.
So every stand up is almost always good news, like they've made progress, and that starts my day off very well. From then, I just write down what I have to do for the day. I write a lot, so just write down what I have to do for the day and I try to finish it. So let's say for a task, the PO normally comes with a ClickUp ticket and then offers to be on a call to probably go through the task that we have to complete. And then I ask all my questions, then chat with my design team a bit. Yeah, I think that's my normal day. And then 70% of the day is spent on the floor designing. Yeah, like almost a month now, I've not sat at my desk.
Really?
Almost like a month now, I just sit on the floor and then put my laptop on. I have a monitor in the room, but I just take my laptop, sit on the ground and design. So
that sounds fun.
It's very fun, actually. It's very fun.
You work remote?
Turn on your mic. Come again?
You work remote?
Yeah.
Okay.
So when you turn on your camera during stand-up, they have a huge, like, picture of you. Like, because... Yeah, so that's my, yeah. Like I said, my team is like very smart. So yeah, I always say that proudly. My team is very smart, so I don't really stress a lot. Yeah.
Wow, it's nice to have really smart teammates. I'm sure if they're listening to this, they're going to be really happy.
Yeah, we're going to buy him lunch next week.
Yep.
I say we're going to buy him lunch next week.
Yep. Okay, yeah. So Benny.
Well, there is no, I think that is probably what I like about my current place of work. So I don't work remote. I'm mostly in the office and sometimes we do hybrid. So no day is exactly the same as the other. You know, sometimes we would, usually on Mondays, we would come together and discuss what it is that we have to do, where everybody supports. And then you go about your business. So as you work, again, as you work on your design or your task, you're carrying everybody along, you know, what is happening. And so we mostly, we're not that organization that spends so much time meeting unnecessarily, you know. Yeah, and then I go on and do
also like that.
go ahead and do some focus work. So I like to have breaks in between my work, you know, because after a while you strain your eyes, your head is, you know, just focused on that thing, your back might be aching. So I usually will just walk around or take a 30 minutes break and then come back to it. So yeah, other times you could be in the field talking to stakeholders, you know, you could be having interviews with users. So no, I don't, there's no typical work day.
Yeah, I think this question was probably too specific, but it's nice to know the kind of things you do during your day. Okay, so for my next question, how do you correlate user interface with the user experience?
Benita wants to start. Yeah.
nice comfortable. But okay, I think we've somehow spoken to this, you know, through this conversation. So again, your design decisions, the features, whatever button you're putting within your product, ideally should be informed, right? It should be backed up by data, by, you know, business user experience. So ideally, it's just normal to kind of translate that process, what you have done, into your design. It's very easy, right? Now, where you would find it more challenging or a bit of a challenge is when you don't understand what you're working on. You don't understand the product that you're working on. You don't understand who are the users. Why are we even doing this in the first place? What's the most important thing that we need to, you know, get done for this product to be successful at this launch? Which is again why we always advocate, like, let us understand this thing before we jump straight into interfaces. So I would say ideally, when you've done your UX, when you've understood what the product that you're building is, when you have a really good, you and your team have a really good understanding of the problem that you're trying to solve, it's easy for you to, you know, just go into UI, because you know that, I mean, you would have done your wireframe anyway, if because they're designers who do not use wireframes and they still do a fantastic job, right? So assuming you've done your wireframe, you already know, okay, I'm putting this here because of this reason. So it's just easy to flow when you've done that. Yeah.
All right. Now that's very interesting.
Yeah. So whatever she said, and then, yeah, so it's important to, like, properly understand what you want to do before you start, like, pushing pixels. So it might look easy in your mind, like, oh, the user just needs to do A, B, and C, so I just need to create this screen, do the screen. But then once you break down the problem, you realize it might be even bigger than what you were imagining. The last ticket I closed, I thought it was going to be just a 1 week project. I was wrong. I thought it was going to be a 1 week project.
It's shocking.
The PM brought the PRS. I read it. We had a call.
What's a PRS?
A product requirement specification.
Okay.
So it's a document that outlines the feature that they want to build and explains everything, their thought process, how it's going to affect the business, as with their product vision. So it's a very complete document. That's why I say my team is smart. Yeah, so I read the thing, I was like, oh, okay, it's cool. So as I started writing, outlining, and I was like, oh.
Huh?
What is this? But yeah, so once you understand the product, once you understand the problem you are trying to solve, then it will be easier for you to complete the interface part. But then if you jump straight into interfaces, you get stuck, and then you have to start all over because you realize you didn't understand fully what you were trying to do, right? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so for my next question, does human psychology play a role when choosing a design feature?
Yep.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Yeah. Because every product has user personas. So the user persona is like the type of person who is likely to use your product, or the type of person who you are targeting. So let's say mobile money, the product mobile money would have the customer, would have the agent, right? So those are two different user groups, right? So you have to understand the behaviors or the mindset of the person who's going to be in your product at that time. So let's say with mobile money, somebody wants to withdraw their last 10 CDs. The person is not coming to the agent with smiles on their face. The person is not coming to the agent with smiles on their face. The person will be feeling some, I don't know if it's sadness, but it's not a happy feeling because you're going to reduce your balance to zero. Mm-hmm. Another thing is with the job portals, people are desperate for jobs. So they are coming to the platform with desperation. They're coming to the platform to look for answers. So that's not a place to go and be doing cartoons and the rest. Because the person wants answers. So you need it to be as straightforward as possible. So a final example will be people who provide funeral services. If you are designing a website for a funeral service, you're not going to use what fonts like Joker or
oh my gosh.
So that ties into the previous question about UX, understanding the problem, understanding the user before you start the interview. So you need to understand the thinking of the user at that point in time. So you get this a lot, especially in fintech, because people are dealing with money. So everything you do has to be as clear as possible, especially crypto. Crypto in Africa is still in its adoption stages. So whatever you do in that scenario, you need to make it very clear before somebody goes to lose their money and they'll say, oh, the user experience was the one that caused me to. So you need to be careful and think about these things. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Benny, what are your thoughts?
Remind me the question again. Sorry, I zoned up for a bit. <That's just> funny.
So I think the question was, does human psychology play a role when choosing a design feature?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which is, again, back to UX, right? But there's a huge part of UI too that deals with this, because you're choosing things like colors, you're choosing things like, where am I going to position what? So as Derek said, you have personas. At the end of the day, you are creating these things for humans, right? And that is where functionality comes into play. That is when human-centered design comes into play. That is when user-centered design comes into play. So absolutely, you do.
Okay. Yeah, so for my next question, and this is quite related to the one I asked before, Do you think it's morally right to design user interfaces that can get people hooked on apps for hours? And since you people have made it very clear that as product designers, you understand how users think or should feel at certain times. So what are your thoughts on this?
So it's a 50-50 thing, right? The customers or the users come to, or they use the product to feel something, right? And then we know that nothing is free. If the app is free, you are definitely giving them something in return. It's not money, but you are giving it your time, you are giving it satisfaction. So let's say TikTok, right? I really like TikTok's design or TikTok's experience because it's one of the apps alongside Twitter and Facebook that can keep people glued for hours and then not feel it. You can be scrolling on TikTok and you're like, it's been 2 hours. And even though you are not paying, TikTok is learning a lot from you. The videos that you like, the videos that you skip quickly, the videos that you watch multiple times, all of that gives data to TikTok to know what exactly to push, right? So yes, it might feel unethical. Yes, there are some design patents called dark US or dark patent that people intentionally design for such experiences. So even though, yes, from the outside it might look like it's cynical, but the user is also getting something back. They are getting satisfaction, they are getting happiness, they are trolling people. So I can't say it's good or bad. It's just everybody's getting what they are looking for out of the deal.
Okay, so from what I gathered, it's a give and take.
It's a give and take.
But then who benefits more, the users or the organizations?
It depends. We have different types of users also. So still with the TikTok example, we have a user that's somebody who just watches the videos. We have a user as somebody who creates videos. And then we have TikTok themselves. So someone who watches the videos is looking to laugh, is looking to see something random, and they get that benefit. Someone who creates videos is looking for attention, is looking for the views, is looking for money from brand deals. They also get their side of the deal. TikTok is also looking for users to use the product, people to give them the data they are looking for, and they also get their part of the deal. So everybody benefits.
Okay, what about an instance where you make it so easy for someone to withdraw money from their account for maybe things like betting or buying things online? Like, I think these are all things which product designers facilitate.
Wow. Dragging us by the edge.
Imagine, like, just withdrawing all the money from your account by a click of a button, right?
So,
things like that.
What I would say here is, who determines what is morally right or not?
Yes.
That's one, because morality is relative, and for whatever product that you build, there's a certain market for it. There are users for that, right? Secondly, I think there will always be products that are targeted at users negatively, right? So even if you as a designer, personally, I'm driven by the human factor part of design. Right, which is why I think later on I'm going to venture into like service design, because I'm huge on how do people experience spaces, things, and places. But that's me, right? If I don't take that job, some other person will do it. That's where self-restraint comes in. You as a user, I mean, there are thousands of ways within which you can control how much time you're spending here. So it's not, it's easy to want to shift the blame to the business or the product designer that is designing, but you have a huge part to play. I'll give you an instance. Earlier I said I do focus work. I put my phone on my laptop on Do Not Disturb, and I literally, it seizes all notifications, right? If I don't go looking for it, I will not find it. So there are measures that can help you. Even what's this feature on iPhone that kind of shows you your, I've forgotten what it's called, how much time you're spending, you know, and you can put their restraints.
The screen time.
Yeah, so there are restraints around these things for you to, as a human being, to say, okay, I've had enough. You know, so I think at some point responsibility should be taken by the user while we're, you know, dragging businesses and product designers. Take responsibility as a user.
Yeah. But I agree with
I'm promoting, you know, because as I've said, personally, this is when I think about design, I think about the human factor and more, you know, the ethical side. However, yeah, it's important that users begin to learn how to take responsibilities for these things as well.
Yeah, but as users are learning, you're also learning, right? Yeah. Because you learn from their data. And from what I'm aware of, product designers make use of a lot of user analytics. So it still goes back to the question of whether it's necessarily morally right, but it's really confusing because users do have the choice.
Yeah.
Right. But how can they easily make a choice if you're there whispering in their ear, like, hey, clicking me, you know? Like, I know that you probably use the phone with your thumb, so the button to do this is just right where your thumb can easily access it.
Well, we're having a conversation now, so it's a teachable moment and a learning moment for everybody. So it's important, you know, there are movies created around this, you know, people who have worked in certain organizations at certain levels that were involved in creating this kind of products. There are movies about it, so the conversation is already ongoing. You just need to tap in and see what they're saying based off their experience working there and how you can come in handy to you as a more mindful user.
Okay.
But okay, so the experience around free trials, right, that a company would ask you for your credit card number for a free trial, right? that's particular experience has sparked a lot of controversy. That if it's a free trial, why are you taking my credit card information? But then I also believe product designers are not just looking out for the user. I like to think of my stakeholders also as users, because they also are interested in whatever goes on in the product. So whilst I want the user to have a very good experience, I want my company to make money.
Okay, wow. Like that's a that's a completely different perspective, but like it still makes a lot of sense.
And if I don't take your credit card information for my free trial, how do I make sure I get you on board? Maybe after the free trial, you've forgotten about my product. When you see my debit alert, you remember that.
You need to turn it off quickly.
So yeah, businesses also have to make money some way. Whilst we want the users to be happy, we also need to make money. And that's the sweet spot that product designers often have to hang around in. Mm-hmm. Else, if it's all about user 100%, you are hardly going to make any money.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's quite a segue we've really been focused on like what the end users feel or want, but then we never really stop to consider what the businesses actually want to, because being a product designer, you're there for like two people, the bridge between the businesses and the users.
Yeah.
Benny.
Yes. That's all I have to. I think Derek has covered it. You know, we product designers have bills to pay. We have rent, especially in this part of the world. So you just try and be, because we're users too. And as Derek pointed out, when I want to do a free trial and you tell me to input my card, immediately no. It's immediately normal, you know. So maybe because I'm a product designer, but I'm also a user, right? Mm-hmm. So someone else has the same psychology as I do, in the sense that when you ask them for their details, they're like, immediately no. And there are other people who will freely give it, you know. So they're different users, different psychology. You just try to be a more mindful user, as with anything in life.
Can I share a trick for a free trial? So for the free trial, you are not being charged on the spot, right? So nobody's going to know if you input a wrong credit card information. This is just for education purposes.
I think some people actually have found like people would charge you like a very low amount, like $1, just to make sure that the credit card is actually...
That's very rare. That's very rare. The only time I've probably seen that to check if your card is real was with PayPal. That they will tell you that, oh, send this amount, we'll refund you. They just want to... but then, probably true. But this might work for a lot of free trial. So, yeah. Don't take this as financial advice.
But if it does work, you need to.
If it does work,
tell them.
My mobile number is 1234.
Okay, then. Let me just ask. A few quick questions. I think time is not really on our side. So top three hacks that make you a good designer or makes your design easier.
Benita.
Ooh. Okay. I will say the first hack that I use to make my design easier is to first understand what I'm building for, understand what is this we're doing? Why are we even doing it? So once I get a good hang of, you know, the problem we're trying to solve, who we're targeting it at, and things like that. That is always the first step for me. And then I do research. You know, I do research because as a product designer, depending on the organization you work with, you might find yourself working across fields. So today you might be doing designing a product for a health facility. Tomorrow you're working with the government, etc., etc. So you have to do the research, know what works where, you know, industry standards and things that should be used. So after that, I then start to, you know, create my style guide because I don't want to go back and forth on what typeface I'm using, you know, my grid system and all of that, and I do that. So those are the three hacks that I would say. I understand it first, I do my research, and then I create my guide components, of course, so that I can still reuse those elements, you know, and fasten my turnout delivery time. So
mine. Okay, so I try to learn as I go on, right? I don't wait till I figured out everything, but then I try as much as possible to get enough information to go on with, right? So whilst maybe Benita might design her components and do all that before started everything. Yeah, so that's why the design process is not a linear process. So if you want to copy what a designer does, you might lose time. And so while she might,
I can really read it.
Yeah, while she might handle components and do all her housekeeping before starting like the work, I would, once I understand the problem I'm trying to figure out, I jump into the mess. And then sometimes when I finish or I design a particular element and I see that I'm going to use this element in multiple places, then I make it a component. So all the time, I don't share my design file because it's a mess.
Never.
I copy the relevant screens, put it in another page, and share that page.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because I'm the only one who understands.
And you don't want nobody judging you. Just
exactly. So, yeah, mine is I jump into the mess, figure out where the direction I want to go, and then when I'm done, I take the fine-tuned product, put it in a different page, and then submit that one. And another thing, I think people a lot of the time rush to get into Figma, right? Sometimes I just pick my notebook and then do some small sketches or do some breakdown what I'm thinking, so that by the time I get into Figma, I don't use Figma to figure out stuff. I use Figma to execute what I've already figured out. So I think maybe that might help. Do not just jump, because have you used Figma? It's a giant blank screen.
Yeah.
And then imagine going to a blank screen confused.
Disaster for recipe, so we could go
either way. It's like opening an empty IDE and you have
you don't have any idea
of what you're doing.
Yeah, so this is all the things I do. But then as you go on, you learn new tricks that would benefit only you, and if another person copies it, might not really work for them.
Okay. Top three sites for learning UI UX.
YouTube, Google, and Twitter.com. But it depends on what you want to learn. So if you want a lot of experience, understanding how to craft an experience, IXDF, the Interaction Foundation, even though it's a paid program, they have a lot of articles that are free that you can read. Twitter is a very good place. Medium, I've learned a lot from medium.com. Just search for UX design, you'd see a lot of articles there. And then YouTube, still Twitter.
Okay, top three sites for learning UI UX, Benny.
So again, it depends on because UI UX is broad, right? And it depends on, I find that I like structured learning. And the thing with YouTube and with Google is, information overload, especially when I was starting out, that was something I struggled with. There was so much, I didn't know, where am I supposed to start? YouTube, definitely. But you want to be able to narrow down your search based on the objective or goal that you're trying to, achieve. And then Twitter. There's a lot to be learned on Twitter, but you have to, again, you have to pick and choose who you listen to on Twitter, because, there are lots of opinions there. You just have to carefully pick and choose who you listen to on Twitter. So those are my top.
Okay. Do you have a product design or some sort of UI UX version of Stack Overflow, where like developers usually run, if they have issues with their code, to they just run there and just try and find like the next fix? Or is it more different since what you deal with is specific to different users?
I think isn't Twitter Stack Overflow?
because I feel like with Twitter, right, like there's an avalanche of opinions and it's not really organized to make it easy to find what you want. Because with Stack Overflow, I know that if I go to Stack Overflow, I'm going to find things relating to code, right? But you go on Twitter and the next thing someone is talking about politics and you want to solve a problem at work and you might even have to do with some unnecessary politics, not necessarily relating to like real world politics, but then even things like morality of UI UX and all of that.
So for those, there are communities, right? At least in Nigeria, there's Asopoteri, which is in Lagos, and there's small, there in Abuja we have our community of designers as well. So on there we use different messaging platforms to just get together and share our experiences, share job opportunities. There's also Design Buddies. It's on what's this platform called again? It has this, I don't know why the name has just escaped my it's mostly like associated with Web3, but it's a social media app. So yes, you Design Buddies is it's a huge community, the global community, and what they share I find so helpful. So maybe I would remember the name of the platform I shared with you on in the show notes, so that people can find that. But yeah, very nice.
I think Nigerians do very well with the community. That's a, yeah, they really do well. Like, it's really cool.
Yeah, I think with every tech community there.
Okay, people, catch us on our next episode where we continue the discussion on product design with Benny Makachi and UX Derek. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.